And good morning, Bruce.
And good morning, Cora. Good morning, listeners. Wonderful to have your company, as always, on a Thursday morning for Community Conversations. And wow, do you know it's the 26th of August today? That means in 4 months' time, we'll be sitting there the day after Christmas. Wow, 4 months. 8 months down and 4 months to go. Hard to believe that we are two-thirds of the way between Christmases. Have you started thinking about Christmas shopping? Dear, oh, Bruce, get off the air. That is terrible to be saying that at this time of the year. Look, it's fast approaching the 1st of September, which, of course, is the kickoff for spring, the official spring kickoff. So 1 week. This week, this time next week, which is absolutely fantastic. And we are starting to get glimpses of spring here in the Yarra Valley, which is fantastic. Hope you've got all your vines pruned, all your vineyards out there, and getting ready for the new season, of course. How's the week been? How are you coping with lockdown? Don't know about you, but it seems even tougher the second time around. We thought it was going to be over, didn't we, by Christmas 2020? And here we are in August 2021. And the overarching topic of conversation is still COVID-19 and vaccination and lockdowns and things. And jeepers creepers, aren't we getting there? And if you haven't got your vaccination yet, get out there and get it so we can get out of this lockdown. It's a really good thing to do. Apart from that, how are you travelling? I know it's very difficult for those of you who have children at home, and maybe some of you are listening this morning, trying to do home education, homeschooling, and juggling everything else, juggling work and other commitments. Good on you. Hang in there. We will get through this. As always, we have interesting stories to tell here on Community Conversations. We talk with interesting people. We talk with people who inform us, who give us information about things that are important, about things that we really do need to know about. And this morning, I'm going to give you a little clue, and then I'm going to introduce our very special guest via Zoom. There's an old expression called, where there's a will. Can you remember how that goes? Where there's a will, yes, there's a way. And there's a little clue to thinking about what we might be talking about this morning. And a big shout out to Eric, who's finishing 50 years as a butcher in Healesville, just talking about that. What an amazing story. And talking to Gary and Lorraine and Kath and Bob and some people at Healesville Uniting Church about wills and estates. And I thought, gee, you know, that's something that we haven't talked about. So where there's a will, there's someone who knows something about them. Well, that's kind of my expression. On Zoom this morning, all the way from Healesville, I have the amazing Nicole Slingsby. Good morning, Nicole. How are you this morning?
I'm well, thank you, Bruce. Good morning to you.
And, of course, you're, like the rest of us, locked down, and we're Zooming the program this morning, which is always a little more challenging, but with the help of Cora here in the studio and her amazing technical expertise, we're doing it. So Nicole is a solicitor. She is a Healesvillian. And I think you've been there for a decade. Is that right, Nicole? You've been...
Yes. I've still got a long way to becoming a local, but yes, I've been around for a while now.
Well on the track. That's absolutely fantastic. And your area of expertise is indeed wills and estates and other legal work, of course, as well. But this morning, in response to a number of requests and a couple of ideas, we're having a special program on just that, on wills and estates. And for listeners who already have a will out there, this will be a bit of quality assurance for you and a bit of checking in. For those of you who might be listening this morning who don't have a will, well, we're going to tell you why you should, how you'd go about it, and what you would include in the will. So there you go. Is that what we're going to do, Nicole, this morning?
That sounds like fun.
Yes, there you go. So let's talk a little bit about you, first of all. I'm just wondering, what does a journey look like that brings you into the legal profession? I know there's all sorts of jokes about, you know, legal practitioners and lawyers and that. We won't go there this morning, Nicole. But what got you started down that path to the legal profession?
Well, I had a change in family circumstances after raising a family and then decided to go and study law as something a little bit different. And I've really enjoyed learning more and more about wills and estates in my travels, and decided to open up a practice in Healesville, just working specifically in that area.
Fantastic. It's a challenging time to start a new business, Nicole, and good on you at the moment with lockdown and all of that. But we're going to tap your brain this morning in terms of all of that amazing knowledge that you do have about wills and estates. I've had a lot of questions asked of me already when I was talking to people about the program this morning. So we're going to throw all those at you, and we're going to do that straight after our first song this morning, which is Eric Clapton, Your Choice, Nicole, Tears in Heaven.
Lovely.
Would you know my name if I saw you in heaven? Would it be the same?
And I'm Bruce Argyle, sitting here in the studio in Wirralik this morning, bringing you community conversations with my very special guest via Zoom, Nicole Slingsby from Healesville. And we're talking wills and estates this morning. So let's get into it, Nicole. And perhaps the obvious question to start up is why should we have a will in the first place? I mean, do we need one? Does everybody need one, or do we have to be over 60 or something or other? What's the criteria to have a will or not have a will? There you go. There's a good question to start.
Okay. Well, everyone, I think, needs a will, Bruce, and I'll give you some examples of good reasons why. So first, I think probably the most significant reason is that if you instruct a solicitor to prepare a will for you, they'll do all of the searches that need to be done and ascertain how you own all of your assets. And these are really important pieces of information for ensuring that your will does what you want it to do and what you think it's going to do. So if you hold, for example, property in a certain way, it may not form part of your estate. So that may need to be changed to ensure that your will carries out your wishes.
That sounds a bit scary, that one.
Yeah, well, it is. And people are often shocked when you investigate their affairs and how all of their assets are held to find that some things don't form part of their estate necessarily, and that they need to change the way things are structured and look into estate planning to ensure that their will works.
We'll come back to that one. I want to ask you more about that, but keep going, please.
Okay. Secondly, you can record your wishes and let the world know what you want to happen to your belongings when you die. You can appoint people of your own choosing to carry out your wishes. So you've probably heard of an executor who would carry out your wishes, and a trustee, executor and trustee, who might assist in long-term administration of your estate.
So tell us, so those who don't know, Nicole, just explain who is an executor, who that would be, and who would be a trustee if you needed one. Yeah.
So an executor is a person who you can appoint in your will, and that person has the responsibility of coming in and knocking on the door of my office or someone else's office and saying, my dear father Joe has passed, here's his will and here's his death certificate, what do I do now?
Okay.
And then the solicitor would assist you in preparing all of the required documents and explaining what your responsibilities as an executor are. So you would need to get in all of the assets of the estate and then deal out the assets to the beneficiaries as set out in the will. And there are some rules that you need to comply with that your legal advisor would be able to help you along the way with. But that's generally the role of the executor.
And can that be a family member or a friend, or does it have to be a legal person?
No, it doesn't need to be. And in fact, there's a lot of non-legal work involved in that position and that responsibility, such as preparing a property for sale, for example. So as you can imagine, the people who are going to benefit, so for example, children of a parent, might be the right people to carry out that sort of job.
Great. And a trustee, by comparison?
Yeah, so by comparison, for example, if a person died leaving young children and they were to inherit when they turned 18, let's say,
yes,
then you might appoint a person who's different from your executor. It may be the same person, but it may be someone you appoint who's different from the executor to carry out that role of investing and looking after the funds that those children would be entitled to when they reach that age. So that's where perhaps a professional advisor might be handy if you're looking at long-term trusts in your will.
Fantastic. And probably the other question as we start to look at wills that is absolutely critical is, what actually does a will need to be in order to be legal? So what does a will have to look like, include, or be dated or signed or whatever? What makes a will legal compared with an illegal one, Nicole?
Yeah, good question, Bruce. And that's something that is really relevant, especially if people have decided to write up a will at home and sometimes it doesn't comply with the formal requirements, and that can cause a few problems down the track. So there are some formality requirements, and then there are some other considerations of the actual will maker that need to be thought about to ensure that the will's valid. So the formality requirements are that it firstly needs to be a will. So it needs to be something in writing that disposes of your property when you die. So we need to know it's a will. Mm-hmm. It needs to be signed by the will maker or at the direction of the will maker if they're unable to sign for themselves. And it needs to be signed in the presence of two or more witnesses.
Okay.
And then, as you can imagine, these types of requirements help guard against fraud.
Yes.
So there's very good reason for having those sorts of rules in place.
Terrific. And we have had a program on fraud earlier in the year. Listeners, if you missed that one, go back and have a look at the podcast for February of 2021.
There you go. That's interesting. So the requirements of the will maker are that they need to have legal capacity, intention and knowledge. So the legal capacity means that they have to be of sound mind, memory and understanding.
Mm.
Now, that's a tricky thing to define, isn't it?
It is. So, that is.
I could explain that in more detail, but I don't want to bore anyone either. But,
yeah. Sometimes with COVID, Nicole, I don't feel like I fit that category myself. So there you go, or something. But so what you're saying is, So the person has to be capable, I guess we're saying, of actually preparing that will or getting that will prepared.
That's right. Look, there is a legal test for it that the courts apply, but generally speaking, they have to have legal capacity, so be of sound mind, memory and understanding, and be over 18 years of age, unless they're married or planning to marry, in which case they can actually be younger than 18.
Oh, we won't go there today. Yep.
No. they need to intend to make a will. So when they sign that document, they need to intend that it's their will and not a preliminary document that they're signing. And they need to be doing it of their own free will, not something that they're pushed into or told to sign here.
There's a very good pun there, doing it on their own free will, Nicole, yes. But we won't go there either.
Finally, they need to know and approve of the contents of the will that they're signing. So it's really important that if you ask for a professionally drafted will to be made for you, that you read that will in full and understand exactly what it means and ensure that it really does represent your wishes, because that's the whole idea. You want your wishes to be recorded in writing.
Mm.
So that's a very important part of the requirements.
Just one practical question that comes to mind there is who keeps a copy of that, and do you give a copy to, you know, to your executor? Do you give a copy to a family member? Your solicitor keeps a copy? Like, what are the practicalities of that? Once you've got that will, do you give it to someone? Do you keep it somewhere?
Yes, well, people have different ideas of what they'd like to do, but my advice would be to leave the original with your solicitor. There are some very good reasons for that. Sometimes people think that they might be doing the right thing by quickly changing something on their will and writing on it or marking it or attaching something to it. And these can cause a lot of unforeseen problems, and they may even they may cancel out your will. It may change your will in a way that you don't intend.
Mm.
So it's best to, if you want to make any changes or to update anything in your will, that you receive some legal advice on that to ensure that it does what you want it to do. Again, we want it to represent your wishes. So these are really important points. And then a copy should be kept at home in your special file with your important documents.
Yes.
And you can let your executor know where they can find that copy should anything happen to you. And that way your executor will be able to look at that will, see where the original document is held, and they'll be able to follow up and find all of your original documents if they need to.
Terrific. You're listening to Nicole Slingsby. We're talking wills and estates here on Community Conversations this morning. There's a whole lot of questions that come out of what you're saying there, Nicole, and what do we do if we want to change it, and if it's disputed, and things that can go wrong. We're going to talk about all of those things in the next half an hour and try and get to the bottom of the challenges around wills and estates. Nicole, just wondering, we've just had a slight technical glitch here. Our song that was going to come on is on, still on the way. So let's just go back for a moment. Is it possible to change your will? And once you've got it, can you update it? And what's the process there to make sure that you haven't got sort of two wills going on with slightly different instructions or something? How does that work?
Yes, absolutely. You can update a will. You can make a codicil, if you like, to just make a small change in your will. However, nowadays, because we have technology that allows us to make small changes and reprint documents, it's probably more straightforward to make a brand new will a lot of the time.
Okay. We've found our song, Nicole. We're gonna go to listen to Chris Stapleton and Tennessee Whiskey, one of your choices, and we'll come back and we're going to answer all those other questions. And thanks for joining us this morning for Community Conversations, where we're talking wills and estates. We have the amazing Nicole Slingsby online on Zoom, and we're talking about all the challenges and, well, why you should have a will in the first place, and if you haven't got one, how you go about getting one, and all of the challenges that are associated. And so far, we've if I could summarise, Nicole, we've said that everybody should have a will, everyone over 18, that is, and that we need to have an executor and we need to have a trustee. Or do we have to have both of those? We have to have an executor anyway. Do we have to have a trustee as well?
That can be the same person, Bruce.
Yeah.
Only if you wanted to appoint different people, depending on what your needs are and your will.
Yeah, they're very good. And in terms of the content, just give our listeners who may have just joined us a summary of what makes a will legal.
Yes, okay. So it needs to be in writing and to dispose of your property and signed by the will maker in the presence of two witnesses. And those two witnesses need to also attest to the signature and sign the will as well. So they're the basic formality requirements. And the will maker needs to have legal capacity to make a will, intention and knowledge of the content. So there's some main points about the legality of a will.
Fantastic. And if you're hurriedly trying to write some of this down, as I know some of you might be, this will all be podcast here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1 by next week. And you can get a copy and listen to it at your leisure then. Nicole, the next thing that comes to mind around wills is testamentary capacity. I'll get it right. What does that mean and why is it important?
It's a really important point, especially if people leave making their will until they really feel that they may not be able to do it any longer. And that's when it might come into issue. If someone's elderly or they're suffering from some mental health problem or degenerative disease, so that's when we have to look closely at that matter of testamentary capacity. So I mentioned before that it's a requirement that a will maker has sound mind, memory and understanding. And how the court tests that was defined way back in 1870 in an English case. And the legal test is still applied in our courts today, if you can believe that.
Okay.
So in summary, it's that the person who's making the will needs to understand what making a will means and the effect of it. So that makes complete sense.
Sure.
You don't want someone banging out a will if they don't know what they're doing.
Yes.
They need to know what property they own that they're giving away in their will, so that's important.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be aware of who they'd be expected to provide for in their will. So people who they have a moral obligation to provide for, like dependent children, for example, and who might make a claim for provision. So if they're thinking in the back of their mind, well, I really should leave something to my cousin who's lived with me for 25 years,
yes,
we need to know that they're aware of that. And they need to not be suffering from a mental health defect or delusion. And this is the fun part that affects the way that they leave their gifts.
Mm.
So they may pass the first three parts of that legal test and they may well be suffering from a mental health delusion. But if it doesn't affect the way that they leave their gifts in their will, then the will can stand as valid.
Okay.
And there are some really fun examples of cases that I probably shouldn't bore you with.
No, we will talk about a couple of examples in about another 10 minutes, just of where things can go wrong, Nicole. I think that would be good for people to hear that.
Yes.
Sorry, I interrupted you there, but you've talked about leaving property. What else can you leave? Aside from property, I guess that's the obvious one, but what else can you leave in your will?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting point, and it's something that trips a lot of people up. And that's why it's really good if people instruct a solicitor to make a will for them, and the solicitor has to go and do all of those investigations to work out how their property's held. Because the trick is that sometimes things that you think will form part of your estate, in fact, don't form part of your estate. And that means that you can't leave them by your will.
Mm.
So property that you can leave in your will, and when I say property, I mean anything that you own. So you've got real estate. You might have other property that's just in your name, so shares, for example, or bank accounts.
Or jewellery or a car or something.
That's right, yes. And mm-hmm. they will all form part of your estate and they'll be dealt with in your will. But then the way that you hold certain property can mean that it doesn't form part of your will. So, for example, if you own a house by yourself, it forms part of your estate when you die. If you own a house with another person, you may hold that property as tenants in common, meaning that you own half each. Or you may own that property as joint proprietors, meaning that the two of you own that property 100% together.
Mm.
So there are different consequences in those situations. So if you own part of a property as tenants in common, when you die, your part of that property will pass into your estate and it will be dealt with according to your will.
Mm.
If, however, you're owning a property jointly with someone else, you both have 100% interest over the property together. If one of you dies, that property does not pass into your estate at all. So it's not left in your will. It doesn't form part of your estate. It passes immediately to that other joint owner.
Wow, that's pretty significant, Nicole, what you've just said there. That's very important.
It's very, very important. It's, depending on your family scenario and circumstances, it can be vitally important in your estate planning process.
Mm. Mm. I've got a question I probably should have asked you 20 minutes ago, but what happens if you don't have a will, Nicole? Is that just a very dangerous space to be in?
Well, it's different. It means, firstly, that you don't get an opportunity to express your wishes and you don't get to appoint people of your choosing to those important positions where they administer and look after your estate or appoint guardians of minor children, express your wishes in terms of burial arrangements, all of those sorts of things you can't do. And secondly, the law will dictate where your estate goes on intestacy, they call it, if you die without a will.
Mm.
And look, the law doesn't take into account the merits of your particular beneficiaries, who you'd like to have receive your estate.
Yes.
It doesn't take into account the relationships and how people have contributed to your life. So I think it's important to consider that if your wishes are set out carefully in a will, then you let everyone know what you want to happen. But you can avoid a lot of family conflict that way too, because people all have their own interpretations of what someone would wish for or what they'd want to happen with their estate. And unless this is set out, we can have problems where people are contesting situations and where the estate might go.
Yes. You're listening to Nicole Slingsby. We are talking wills and estates, and in a little while, we're going to talk about some of the things that can go wrong with wills and why it's important that you have a proper will and one that's properly framed and all of that. Is it binding, Nicole? If it's properly framed and worded and all of that, can people contest it? I mean, we hear lots of things in the media about so-and-so who was unhappy about, you know, they were left out of the will or someone else, you know, got twice as much as they did or something or other. Talk to us about that.
Mm, yeah. Depending on the situation, who the person is who might wish to contest the will, they can do so. So people in certain relationships with the will maker. You might recall when I was describing the legal test for having capacity, that a person needs to understand who they've got a moral obligation to provide for, and this is where these rules come into play. So people who are eligible to make an application against your estate can be your spouse, so your husband or wife or de facto, a child, a stepchild, a former spouse, if they could still take family law proceedings against you, and even other people such as a grandchild if they were dependent on the will maker at the time. And actually a recent, when I say recent, 2017, in the world of law it's recent, clarified the expanded meaning of the term stepchild of a deceased person to include an adult child of a de facto relationship.
Wow.
So that might ring alarm bells for a lot of people.
Mm, especially those of us with blended families, and we know family structures are slightly more complex than what they used to be perhaps 100 years ago, Nicole.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it doesn't necessarily mean that such a person would be successful in making a claim, but they can get over that first hurdle of being able to do so. The court wouldn't make an order unless in changing the distribution of your estate, unless it's found on the facts that there was a moral duty to provide for that person and their proper maintenance and support, and that you failed to do so in your will. So there's an awful lot of considerations, a lot of factors that are considered by the court in making that type of decision. So if you need advice on this type of issue, all of your details and circumstances really need to be looked at closely to be able to assess a risk of that sort of claim against your estate. It's not something that you can receive a blanket advice on. So consider any advice very carefully, but you need to consult someone on that.
Terrific. Nicole, I want to hear some stories and some examples in a little bit, as I'm sure some of our listeners do. But if you are listening this morning and you want to make contact with Nicole, she's located in Healesville. Her phone number is 8521 5656, or you can email her at nicole@nicoleslingsby.com.au. We'll be right back to talk, well, wills and estates and things that can go wrong. And let's have a listen to Dolly Parton with Jolene.
Like a breath of spring, your voice is soft like summer rain, and I cannot compete with you, Jolene. He talks about you in his sleep, and there's nothing I can do to keep from crying when he calls your name, Jolene. And I can easily understand how you could easily take my man, but you don't know what he means to me, Jolene. Decide to do, Jolene.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
And we're talking wills and estates with Nicole Slingsby. And Nicole, we've just had a question off air. Can businesses, can they be included in a will or not?
Yeah, so it depends how that business is structured, actually, Bruce. So if you're operating as a sole proprietor, then obviously everything's in your own name, so that's not an issue. But if you'd like to make arrangements for someone to continue the business, you might want to include those details. If, however, there's a company structure, you need to have that company document or constitution reviewed by your solicitor to ensure that it does what you want it to do and that you can leave your shares or appoint someone as a director in your will. So that's an important consideration to make certain that you've made all of that information available for your solicitor.
Terrific. Before we talk some examples, Nicole, and we are rapidly running out of time, what about just a couple of thoughts on blended families, different families? What do we need to be considering there when we think about a will?
There's lots to consider, isn't there? So it's a tricky question, and it's difficult for anyone to contemplate just generally before they even visit a solicitor, how do I possibly deal with this situation? I've got children from a past marriage and I've got a new spouse and there are children of this new spouse. So even thinking in your own mind what you'd like to do or what your moral obligations are really tricky subject. There are a lot of different ways that this scenario can be dealt with. But the really important part is to explore all of those different options and in the context of your circumstances and the relationships in your life and the dynamics of the family. So some of the options, for example, might be that if you've got enough assets that you can leave enough to your spouse and enough to your children to be able to provide for everyone. Well, they're the really lucky people, and that makes it an easy process, doesn't
sure.
it?
Sure, yes, yes. We're not all in that position, unfortunately.
No, that's right. Then again, the main asset might be a house, and that might be pretty much what there is in the estate. And depending on how you own that house, of course, you remember how I spoke about the different ways that property can be owned. If you own that house jointly, but you'd like to leave half to your children, then you need to change the way that property is held so that it would be held as tenants in common for a start. And then you might consider leaving a life estate or a life tenancy to your spouse, for example, with the rest of your half to go to your children, and your spouse would be able to leave their half to their own children. So that's one sort of option. Another type of path you could go down is creating a testamentary discretionary family trust. And you have a wide range of potential beneficiaries, and they would include your surviving partner and your children. And this type of approach can give good protection to the children, but it also might provide some tax advantages and also some asset protection in terms of insolvency and family breakdown of those children in the future. So that's another avenue to explore.
Terrific. I reckon before we run out of time, Nicole, we should just talk a couple of examples of where things were overlooked or where it all went wrong. Can you, without mentioning names, of course, Nicole, but could you share with us perhaps an example where over the years you've had to try and sort something out, or where there wasn't a will or something or rather that would be helpful for listeners?
I can think of a particular matter where a person a lady passed away without a will, and there were a couple of children, adult children, and those adult children had a particularly difficult childhood and life, and they were very disadvantaged, both of them. There was a house which was the only asset, and there was apparently a spouse, or there had been a de facto, there had been a de facto partner in the past who the children thought was no longer part of the life of the deceased lady. And he came back and into the scene at the last minute and said, no, no, I'm here. And because there was no will, we were left wondering, was there a relationship? Did she want to provide for this de facto partner? Did she want all of her assets to pass to her children? No one knew what was going
on.
Right, and in fact, that particular partner made an application for provision in the estate. One of the children made an application for letters of administration, and the three parties were represented by three different solicitors. It was quite the mess, with not a substantial estate to argue over, and it was a very sad outcome in that regard for all of the people involved, because they were all disadvantaged. And look, they could have all had a lot more had there have been a will and no need for argument over what should happen.
There you go. So the importance of having a will, and if you'd like to talk with Nicole, give her a call on 85215656 or send her an email, nicole@nicoleslingsby.com.au, and Nicole will point you in the right direction. Nicole, we are almost out of time this morning. It's been fascinating. I've got about another 10 questions here. We might have to have you back again, I think, in a few months to talk about some of these other ones, because as the more you talk about it, the more you realise there is to know, and the more dangers and pitfalls there are, in fact. And thank you so much for coming in. Coming in via Zoom this morning. It's wonderful to have you and to have that level of knowledge and expertise. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And before we sign off, I have to give a plug to the amazing Cora for her interview with Karis McEwen at 11 o'clock for Book Week. Karis is the president of the Children's Book Council of Australia in Victoria here, and you'll want to be a part of that, because I know you're all readers and you want to know all about what's happening in Book Week. So that's after 11 o'clock. And at 12 o'clock today, with the amazing Luke Sinclair, Art Journal, again, focusing on zines as part of Book Week. So make sure you tune in then. I'll see you again. Well, I won't see you. I'll talk with you again next Thursday for Community Conversations. Look forward to your company then.